Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. Today is my Winter NAMM wrap-up, so we'll look at some of the products that caught my eye during the show. But first of all, let's talk about the trends that are pretty apparent at this particular NAMM show. First of all, let me say that it was really well attended, and it was very upbeat. And this is both from manufacturers and from attendees. Everybody seemed to have a pretty good amount of business. I didn't hear anyone complaining about not having enough business. As a matter of fact, I talked to a number of manufacturers that said last year was the best year they ever had. So whether they were covering something up or not, I don't know, but everyone just seemed to be in a good mood, and that's always a good way to start. One of the things that I did see, though, is that a lot of manufacturers chose not to show up at NAMM. And I'm talking mostly about audio manufacturers, microphone manufacturers, software manufacturers. It just wasn't as well attended as usually is the case in terms of manufacturers. Another trend that I saw was the fact that there wasn't that much available for the iPad. And I'm talking in terms of iOS apps and also accessories like I/O boxes and things like that. 2 years ago, that was the big thing happening at the show. And last year, there was a lot less of it. And this year, there was hardly any. And there was a couple manufacturers that specialize in that. But even they didn't have a lot of new things for it. So as we've all said before, the iPad is a great output device, but it's not a great input device. And of course, that means that if you're trying to compose music or you're trying to edit it or mix, it's just not very good for that. And we're seeing more and more of that. Now, where we do see it is in live sound. As a remote controller where you can be anywhere in the room and adjust your sound system, or just as a bigger monitor, larger monitor that's bigger than an iPhone, for instance. So that's a trend that you see mostly in live sound. Speaking of live sound, a lot of mainstream manufacturers that were very, very big into the recording business, and you'd always see new recording gear, basically showed none this time. And what we did see instead were a lot of sound reinforcement products, and especially installed sound reinforcement. So that seems to be a big trend. And I think these manufacturers are seeing if they want to sell a lot of hardware, they're not going to do it in the recording business, but certainly there's a much bigger market with deeper pockets when it comes to installed sound. So that's another trend that we're seeing. One of the most interesting aspects about this NAMM show was that there was very little literature given out. You didn't see manufacturers that had extensive brochures, and you didn't see people carrying it around either. I came back from the show with not one piece of literature. That's kind of cool because you don't have to carry it around, but the fact of the matter is you can see just about anything you want online, and most manufacturers already have the latest on their new products, if they have any. They already have it online, so there's no need, and it's better, it's cheaper, because in fact, there's no printing costs for them or very little printing costs, but really, it looks like there's no demand for it either. So that's an interesting trend. Positive or not, I'm not sure, but it's an interesting trend nonetheless. One of the things that did really pick up and it caught my eye was the modular Eurorack synthesizer systems. So the small, tiny modules with eighth-inch jacks and a small, tiny patch cords, they were all over the place. About 3 or 4 years ago, these were found in the downstairs area, which is usually what we call inventor's row. And that's where manufacturers come to kind of test their products. And we're talking about new startups. They may last a NAMM or two. Many don't go beyond that. And this Eurorack trend was very big, but it was very underground. Last year, suddenly they were in the main hall. They were in Hall D, I think. And this year, again in Hall D, but several rows wide. So this is a trend that keeps on expanding. It kind of baffles me because what it amounts to is a lot of small little synth modules that are making the same kind of buzzy square wave, sawtooth wave type of things that I'm not so sure that you're hearing these things show up on pop records, but it's an interesting trend, and there's a lot of people that are really into it. Another interesting trend at the show was video. And there was a lot of companies that were showing all-in-one video packages, meaning video packages that didn't include the cameras, but included switchers and included interfaces so you can do live streaming onto the net immediately. So that was a trend, and there was a number of them, quite a few. Another very interesting trend that probably doesn't really affect anybody that's listening, but it's interesting nonetheless. There were a lot of Chinese manufacturers there, as there always are. And most of them have copycat products. I don't know if it's all made in the same factory and it just comes out with different brand names. But one of the interesting trends that all of these Chinese manufacturers had were light show speakers for PA. So in other words, it'd be a PA speaker. And in the woofer, they would have aluminum cones, or what looked to be aluminum cones. And they would have multicolored LEDs, so it wouldn't even have to be working with the music, but you'd just see these light shows happening within the woofers. And this was a trend everywhere. Maybe this is something that's big in China or big in Asia right now, but it was one of these things that everyone I talked to looked at it and said, why? Why are they doing this? So that was kind of an interesting thing. I don't think we'll see too much of that around. In fact, in one case, they actually had a crystal ball or a half crystal ball on top of the speaker cabinet, which was also giving light shows as well. So again, is it a trend? Yes. Is it useful? Probably not. Another trend that I saw happening was something that is a trend in the wrong direction, and this is really bad sounding sound systems. Just about everywhere you went at NAMM, there were great musicians playing. That was the good part. The bad part is, in many, many cases, the subwoofers are so loud that you couldn't hear the rest. It was just so out of proportion. And it makes you wonder, how do these sound guys learn? They learn the wrong way, and I've written a lot about this in the past and talked a lot about it, but there seems to be a whole generation of sound guys, mostly men, sound men, that learned that the kick drum was the most important thing. And they emphasize in that instead of the quietest thing on stage, which is the vocal. So a lot of times you'll have someone that's talking to you over a sound system and you can't tell what they're saying, which is the antithesis of a sound system. You're supposed to be able to hear every word. And we certainly have the technology. There were times when I heard a relatively well-balanced sound system with the subwoofers under control and there'd be no upper mid-range. So you would hear this. And there was no enunciation. No definition. So I hope that it's not the sound systems themselves. I hope it's the operators, but at the same time, it's kind of sad that that's the case. If you have any questions or comments, send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. Don't forget about my new coaching program. It's 101 Mixing Tricks, Big Studio Tricks with a Small Studio, and it's now available by the module. You can go to 101mixingtricks.com to learn more. Okay, let's talk about some products at NAMM. By far, the neatest thing that I saw wasn't a particular product, but it had to do with the presentation for a product. And this was in the Yamaha booth, and it was a virtual reality presentation of a Steve Gadd drum solo showing some new Yamaha drums. So you put the headset on, and you were 6 to 8 feet above Steve watching him play. And as you looked around the room, you can see everything. I mean, you can look to the rear of the room. You can look up at the ceiling. You can see everything. What was disconcerting was you were 6 to 8 feet in the air above Steve Gadd, and you're a little in front of him. And you can look down at the ground below. You couldn't see your feet. And also, you were in midair. And I got the impression that if I moved either way, I'd fall off. I'd fall down. That wasn't the case, obviously, but it's disconcerting being in the air like that. Another neat thing about this was there's a cursor in the middle. And as you moved your head, you'd move it over to a billboard. And as you went down this billboard, it would click on the various drums that Steve was playing and all of the data about them. So that was kind of cool. One of the downsides, though, was it was just regular old stereo audio. It wasn't in binaural, and it wasn't in surround sound, and that was a real bummer considering how cool this presentation was. So, again, you're going to see a lot of virtual reality very, very soon. It's a big deal. It's very, very cool. Let's just get the audio for it. We have the technology. We've had it for a long time. Let's do it. There are a lot of very cool new products. One was the Manly New Mu. That's N-U-M-U. And what it is a stereo Varimu compressor. So it uses Varimu technology in order to get its very unique sound. Manly has a very famous compressor called the Varimu, and this, in fact, is a stereo version, a smaller version of it. It has something very cool. It's called a HIP control, H-I-P. And what this will do, it will squash the dynamics, but yet it will let some of the transients through in such a way that the relative volume will come up and you'll still maintain the punch. And of course, you can do that with the tack and release controls, but this is a special circuitry for it. I haven't tried it, don't know what it sounds like, but it sounds pretty cool. And again, this is a fairly good price at $2,500. Korg also had a very interesting tube technology. And this was something that they called the NuTube. N-U-T-U-B-E, new tube. What this was a vacuum tube on a chip. It comes from the display industry, in other words, a video display industry, and it was basically a twin triode that was on a large chip. Now, when we think of computer chips, computer integrated circuits, we usually think of something that will fit in the palm of our hand. It's probably as big as a 9-volt battery, somewhere in there, a little smaller than that. In this case, the new tube was a lot larger, and it was more like the size of a computer memory chip. So in other words, if you've ever upgraded the memory in your computer and you got that memory board that had the multiple memory chips on it, it was about that size. It was pretty cool. It's called the 6PL. It's interesting. It's flat. Again, we think of vacuum tubes as large and round, and in fact, this was a flat package. There was a number of products that they had, including a guitar with it in, and pedals and amplifiers and stuff, which were all prototypes. Can't say what they sounded like. It was really hard to hear in that hall. It's an interesting new technology, and Korg says that they may, in fact, release it to the world so everybody can use the new tube. Slate Digital was showing its Raven MTI-2, which is the latest iteration of the Raven touchscreen console. And this is a small version. It's 27-inch monitor, touchscreen. And I think I'm softening my stance on the touchscreen. And as you know, I've been a skeptic only because it seems like it would hurt your elbow over time having to reach things. But I played with this. And it was very logically laid out, where the most frequently used controls, the most frequently touched pieces on the touchscreen, are at the very bottom of the screen. So you don't really have to move your hands much from a keyboard or from a mouse if you're going to use a mouse. I'm looking forward to actually using this in a session to see if my thoughts on it are accurate or not. But anyway, the price is right. It's about $1,000. So it's very cool, and it's something you should check out. QSC, the amplifier company, had a PA product called the TouchMix, and this has been at the show before, but there's a more refined version, and it's pretty cool. Now, what this is a mixer with a wizard built in, and we're all familiar with wizards that help us go through software very quickly. It's for musicians that don't want to spend any time learning about how to set up their PA or don't have the time. So what you'll do is, if you have a mic on an acoustic guitar, you say acoustic guitar and it sets all the presets for it. If you have a bass, it sets all the presets for it. If you have a kick drum, you say kick drum and it will set the presets for the kick drum. So basically it dials in everything for you so you don't have to think about it. For a small group that has a small PA, not everybody can be technically astute. This might be just the thing. So they had it in several different sizes, but it looks like it's cool, and that's called the QSC TouchMix. Maybe one of the few truly new products out there was, in a way, it's new anyway, Shure had something called the DualDyne, and it's a dual diaphragm handheld microphone, again, mostly for sound reinforcement. So it has two diaphragms in it. The reason why they did this is to get rid of the presence peak, about 3.5K or thereabouts, and to get rid of the proximity effect, the low-end boost, when you get close to a cardioid microphone. One of the questions I have about this is, after 50 or 60 years of using the SM57, SM58, we're really used to the sound of those. We're used to the peak presence, and we're used to the proximity effect. Not only are we used to it, we like it, and we use it to our advantage. So to take that away may not be the best thing. It's also a very expensive mic at $499. It's new, but it really isn't. AKG actually came out with the very same thing in the 70s with the microphone they had, and it wasn't a big success then. It'll probably find some applications. Will it replace SM58s? I doubt it. There are a couple of new keyboards that came out, new old keyboards, I should say. The Dave Smith Company. Dave Smith, of course, has come out with the Prophet series, the new Prophet 5s and things like that. And now he teamed up with Tom Oberheim to bring out a new version of Oberheim's very famous OB6. So that's cool. It looks like an OB6. It sounds like it. And if you really like the sound of the 80s, the Prophet 5 and the OB6, that was kind of it. They owned synthesizers back then. So Dave Smith has come out with that. On the other hand, Vox has come out with a new version of their Vox Continental organ. And this was kind of the sound of the 60s, especially when it came to British rock. But this is an all new digital version that's very kind of hip and cool. Couldn't hear it. There was one, looked to be a prototype on the floor with kind of like a do not touch sign on it. But anyway, look for that in the near future. The great Eddie Kramer, producer, engineer of Jimi Hendrix, of Kiss, Peter Frampton, all sorts of great sounding records of 60s and 70s, has come out with a new set of guitar pedals called the F pedals. And actually, Eddie came out with these a couple of years ago. I'm just getting hip to them now. But there's some very cool things. Now, of course, the pedals are interesting in a way because they're about a third of the size of a normal guitar foot pedal. So they have a very slim footprint. And of course, you have the things that you'd expect from a foot pedal. There's a distortion pedal, there's a sustain foot pedal, there's a delay, there's a modulation one, there's a reverb, all those things. But what makes them truly unique is they use wireless power. No more batteries and no more external power supplies. By wireless power, I mean they recharge an internal battery by induction. So all you have to do is put it on a pad and they recharge. We've already seen this in the mobile space where there are some pads that will recharge a mobile phone, for instance, or some USB devices. So now we're seeing this, in fact, in the music side as well. So that's kind of cool. They're called F-pedals. Shure, coming back to Shure, they also did something that was kind of unique, impractical, but unique. They came out with a set of electrostatic earbuds. Electrostatic speakers have long been a favorite of audiophiles. They sound really good. The problem is they need huge gobs of power to make them work. So in order to overcome this, Shure came out with its own small amplifier that's a little larger than a pack of cigarettes, a little longer. But what it is a precision amplifier to power these electrostatic earbuds. I listened to them and honestly, they sounded good. They didn't sound great and they certainly didn't sound like they're worth $2,500 plus another $1,000 for the precision amplifier. So I asked the representative, who was the customer for this? And he looked at me kind of sheepishly and he said, well, we think audiophiles. The only problem with that is audiophiles usually don't buy Shure products. That was interesting, but I don't think you're going to see many of those on the market. One thing that was incredibly interesting, though, was a product from vinylrecorders.com. And what they were selling was a small vinyl lathe. And basically, it's desktop. Anybody could put this in their studio and cut their own records. It was only $4,000. And use some of their own proprietary hardware and what looked to be like a high-end turntable, nothing hugely high-end, but a nice turntable, but off the shelf. And it would cut your own records for $4,000. And you can even buy the blanks from them if you wanted. So go check that out. That's kind of interesting if you're interested in cutting your own records. That's vinylrecorder.com. One very cool new product that I saw was from Brad Lundy's Trans Audio Group. Brad Lundy is an old friend that represents a lot of really high-end products like ATC, for instance, Drummer, another one. And this was a new company called Subwoofer Pros. Now, it's very difficult to buy a subwoofer that isn't part of a system these days. About the last company that did that, that specialized just in subwoofers, was a company called M&K, and they haven't been around for maybe 10 years. But Brad came out with his own set of subwoofers, and there's a 12-inch subwoofer and a 15-inch subwoofer. They have the crossovers built in, the bass management built right in. They're also not ported, which is kind of cool. So you can control the frequency response much better if you don't do that. So look for that. It's Subwoofer Pros. An old favorite, Fostex, has reinvented their T-Series headphones, T20s. I always loved to have one of the very first sets of those, and also a set of one of the later versions of it. But they came out with a brand new set of T20s, T30s, T40s, T50s. They're a lot more expensive than they used to be, but if you ever liked Fostex headphones, hey, they're back. One of the most innovative things that I saw at the show was a guitar product, and it was by a company called GTC Sound, or startup out of Israel. It's called the RevPad. What it is a touchpad that you would Velcro onto the pick guard of your guitar. And it allows you to either select effects by just touching this pad, or to pan across effects, crossfade effects. All you needed to do is reach down with one of your fingers while you're picking and do any of this. It was very cool. So it was wireless and basically communicated with their box that could be up to 75 feet away. It already had a wide array of effects built in, which were very cool sounding, but it could be used as an external switching device to switch your own foot pedals and your own effects devices in. So that was very cool. Again, GTC Sound and its RevPad. Another cool product was by Salomon Microphones, and they came out with their own version of a subkick. And of course, Yamaha was the first to come out with their version of the homemade version of the subkick. And basically what that was taking a Yamaha NS10 woofer and wiring that up and sticking it in front of a kick drum in order to get the low frequencies that most mics won't pick up. So it's getting the lower octaves, the 30, 40, 50 cycles in there. And of course, first of all, we did it by wiring up our own speakers. And again, the NS10 woofer seemed to work great. And they're not made any longer. So Yamaha came out with their own version, except it used an 8-inch speaker, and the sound wasn't quite the same. So even though you can commercially buy this now, it just wasn't quite the same thing. Recently, DW Drums came out with their own version, and I think it was called the Moon Mic. But the Salomon Microphones came out with what they call Low Freak. It uses a small 6.5-inch driver. They've adjusted the gain. If you've ever used a subkick microphone, you know that the gain is such that it's way louder than probably the regular kick microphone that you're using. And in this case, they adjusted the gain. So whatever you set it for on your main microphone, your main kick microphone, it'll be about the same on the subkick as well. It also screws onto a standard microphone stand, so you don't need the custom stand that you needed with the Yamaha. And you don't have to worry about jury-rigging it up with your own version of subkick woofer. It's also relatively cheap. It's $180, which is about half the price of the Yamaha subkick. One of the sadder things that I saw was in the Harman booth. And of course, Harman owns JBL and Soundcraft and DBX and Lexicon, among many others. What they've done to these great brand names, DBX and Lexicon, is very sad. DBX used to make great compressors, standards in every studio, high-end products. Lexicon, of course, made the best reverbs, and again, high-end products. Now what they're seeing is as low-end as you can get. Now what you're seeing is DBX direct boxes. You're seeing DBX monitor controllers. You're seeing Lexicon I/O boxes for iPads and for laptops. And again, when you're looking at the $99 market, that's kind of a sad way to go on all this. So I can't tell if the product is any good, but you know, how good could it be for $99? And it's probably made in China. One of the things I should mention now, one of the things that is kind of the same in just about the entire audio industry is the boutique manufacturers really care so much about their products. And each product you'll find, they hand build them in many cases, and they test them. And in the case of MAG Electronics, for instance, the founder of the company listens to every single product before it goes out the door. And you hear this across the audio industry, except when you get into the corporate the Yamahas and the Harmons. What you start to find is all the stuff is made as cheaply as possible in China or in Vietnam or in places that just knock these things out for as little money as possible. And it's a really good reason that you should support these boutique manufacturers, because by and large, they really care about the product. Even though you may spend a little more, they stand behind each product. They'll make sure it works for your lifetime and probably somebody else's after this. And not only that, they sound great. So support your local boutique manufacturer. They're putting their heart and soul into these products, and they're doing it because they really care about audio. And I really believe that from almost all of the small manufacturers I talk to. I can tell you that they really care about their products. So support these guys. They're worth it. Don't buy a cheaper product. If you have to, because that's all the dough you have, okay, I understand it. But if you can possibly scrape up the money to buy one of these higher-end products, you'll be a lot better for it. Your sound will be a lot better for it. And you'll be supporting some manufacturers that could really use your support. A couple other products that I saw, kind of interesting. Mellotron, they've been making the digital Mellotron for a while. And they came out with this Mellotron Mini. And really, it's a small 3-octave keyboard. It will fit just about anywhere. So if you have a big keyboard rig and you're playing live and you want to fit this in an odd space, it certainly is there and you don't need a lot of keys. It's about $2,000, so it's really expensive, but it's a cool little product. And finally, Radial. Love this company. They make the best boxes you can think of. And again, another boutique manufacturer that really cares about their product and makes great devices. They came out with the DiNet, and what this is, a direct box that plugs into a Dante network. And it's not so much a direct box that you'll plug your bass or a guitar into or anything like that, or keyboards. It's more or less for a line input that you need perhaps on a network. And again, we're talking about something that's using Dante, but if you have to plug a laptop in to it, or you want to plug an iPad or an iPod or something like that to inject music into the system, this is the perfect box. I don't know how much it costs, but it has quarter-inch jacks, it has eighth-inch jacks, and it also has headphone output, so you can plug your headphones in to listen what the sound is like before it actually goes onto the system. So these are the cool products that I saw at the show. Boy, there's a lot of others that I didn't see, and I'm sorry if I overlooked your product. And I'm sorry if there's a product that you saw at the show that I didn't cover here. Tell me about it because I'm interested. There are a lot of cool products, both old that were reissued, some that had come out a couple years ago that I kind of overlooked, or there's a new version that makes them better, and some brand new products, some that are worthy of our attention and some not so much. Another byproduct of the NAMM show is I ran into a lot of cool people that will end up being guests on the Inner Circle podcast. So look forward to 2016 filled with some really interesting guests. Thanks for listening and being in my Inner Circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. Many, many thanks to Steve Cherubino. He's the host of the EDM Producer Podcast at edmmr.com. He helps put the show together. Many, many thanks, Steve. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab. Or you can go to bobbyoinnercircle.com. Or if you prefer, find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, or Google Play. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.